Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, this is Peter Paul Brazola on December 17th, getting close to Christmas and the rest of the seasons, the various religions, celebration of Hanukkah, and I forget what the black one is, Kwanzaa, whatever it is, and then of course the Greek Christmas. Anyway, December 17th was a very interesting day. Some interesting birthdays today. Those of you who relish and enjoy good writing and syntax and eloquence, Bill Sapphire's birthday is today. He wrote speeches for Nixon, and he had one of the best columns in the New York Times. For those of you, and then of course, two deaths today on this day. John Greenleaf Whittier, the great poet. I think from Indiana. And then those of you who like those steamy, hot southern novels, Erskine Caldwell, Tobacco Road was probably his most famous novel. And then Canadian Prime Minister, one of the most influential, William Lyon Mackenzie King, died today on this date. And it's interesting, the Canadian Prime Minister seemed to like Harvard. He went to Harvard, as did the late Pierre Elliott Trudeau, and we had those of you who remember 1968 when he was his party won, the Liberals, and he was elected prime minister. They have the different system up in Canada where if the party that wins the most seats selects the prime minister. So if we had that system down here, of course, many of our presidents wouldn't have been president. That's the way, it's the difference in the system, and of course most Americans are still ignorant of our neighbor to the north. But a political phenomenon happened up there in 1968. We had the what they call Trudeau-mania, which is Trudeau was Scotch, French-Canadian, probably baptized Catholic, but a lot of these guys very strange. Very left. In fact, when he went to Moscow, he threw snowballs at Lenin's statue and got into trouble when he was a student. Came from a wealthy French-Canadian family. They owned a lot of gas stations in Quebec. But they had a political phenomenon. They were tired of the old type of Canadian politicians, stayed like John Diefenbaker, and was a guy named Robert Stanfield, who was also went to Harvard. And he was the leader of the Conservative Party, which they were challenging the Liberals for the prime ministership. And then they had, I forgot his name, Canadian Prime Minister Lester Pearson, named an airport in Toronto, the big airport. And he was one of the first to send, Canadian Prime Ministers to send peacekeepers, Canadian troops, to supposedly help maintain the peace with under UN sanction and all that. And he was kind of an old-fashioned liberal politician. And they have dominated the Liberal Party up there, which was equivalent to our Democratic Party in some respects, have dominated the Canadian political scene up there, although they have a lot of splinter parties throughout the years. One of the funniest was the Funny Money Party, which was social credit. Usually out in the West, people whether it's Western Canada or the Western United States, Americans and Canadians who live in the West seem to be much more independent and dislike the Easterners. In fact, the Western Anglo-Canadians referred to Quebecers as pea soupers and other unprintable and unmentionable names on the air. But because of I guess it's the climate and all that, and it's a beautiful country. For those of you who haven't crossed the border, I suggest that you pay a visit to our neighbor to the north. A lot of history up there. And, of course, the War of 1812 is the only war which the Canadians and the British won against us, the Americans. There's a new video out, or DVD, and I suggest you try to get it in the library. I just recently received a copy, which shows the other aspects of the War of 1812. The only wars, only part of the battles that Americans won were on the sea and on the lakes, defeated the British Navy and then, of course, Old Ironside USS Constitution. Let's see. Oh, and birthdays today. Arthur Fiedler, who a longtime conductor of the Boston Pops, which was when they play Pops music and classical arrangements of Pops and some light classics. That's basically most of them are members of the Boston Symphony Orchestra, one of the oldest in the country. And he was about 50 years. And he was unique. He was like Fiorello LaGuardia. He liked to chase fire engines. And then those of you who like really down-home jazz and rhythm and blues, Paul Butterfield was born today. And then one of the great Russian composers, conductors, Dmitri Kabalevsky, who wrote The Comedians, a great piece of music. He's a contemporary of Aram Khachaturian, who his Saber Dance was one of the most popular classical pieces that was arranged into pop music. I remember I had to play it in dance band. I don't know how, you know, those of you who ever heard it, I don't know how people could dance to it. You couldn't even do a polka. And then the guy who invented the atomic clock, Willard Libby, he was born today. So these are the interesting people. And then, an infamous death, and that is of Rasputin. He's the guy who brought down the Romanov monarchy, and his name is synonymous with every type of perversion and political manipulation, extortion, corruption. He's a dissolute monk, and it was very hard to kill him. In fact, they're one of the few cases that involving a Hollywood film, the 1930s film, which was famous because it had all the Barrymores in it, John, Ethel, and Lionel, who played Rasputin. You should see this film. It's fairly accurate. And one of the Romanov princes who tried to it took him a long time to kill Rasputin. They poisoned him, and he survived that. They shot him, he survived that, and then they finally threw him in the river Neva, and he froze to death, finally, and they drowned. Well, Hollywood, he sued Hollywood. He was accused of being homosexual or in the closet, whatever, and he felt his character was slandered and libeled, and he sued successfully MGM. It's one of the few times that somebody who's depicted in the films has sued the studio and won. So that's a film you should see, Rasputin. There's a second version in color that was done in the late 80s. And it's a dispute about the death of Simon Bolivar, who's the liberator of South America, he's supposed to have died in 1830. Another interesting death, one of the late prime ministers of Australia, Harold Holt, who had some beautiful daughters-in-law. He was quite a scuba diver, and he died mysteriously while scuba diving, and there was some spooks. Security people think that there was skullduggery involved, and he may have been spying for the Russians. We don't know. He was a leftist, and he was a good swimmer, a good scuba diver, and there's no reason for him to disappear and drown. But this also happened in the 50s when a famous Russian ship paid a state visit with Khrushchev on it in Bulganin. It paid a visit to Britain. And the British, of course, are among the best spies. They're probably the oldest of the Western countries. And they sent down a British frogman Naval Lieutenant Commander Crabb, and he was supposed to inspect the bottom of this ship. I can't pronounce it, Ordzokordzonys, and he mysteriously disappeared, and a headless corpse later appeared. So it may have been something out of Ian Fleming's 007 novels, where they're always diving into the sea to check out Blofeld's latest devices. I'm going to put Americans, we're hearing Afghanistan is all over the news. People are very upset, as they should be. One of the reasons, as I've always said, because of my long relationship with aspects of Afghan culture and animals and that, is that Americans, what we do know, or what the majority of Americans knew back in the 60s and 70s, those who traveled to Europe and across to India and Afghanistan and Tibet, was that it was a place where you could easily get hash and opium. And hash is very popular during the hippie days here in the Haight-Ashbury and in America. And I think sometimes hash is more popular than marijuana. That's another subject. So, and then, of course, people in the dog field, the great Afghan hound, which is one of the oldest dog breeds. And what's famous about the breed is that two officers in the British Indian Army, I don't think they were the Bengal Lancers, around the turn of the century, during Queen Victoria's last few years when she reigned, she died in 1901, they bought two of these animals, two of these dogs, back to Britain, and they caught the British fancy. Brits are very fond of animals, especially dogs. And it's the only dog in the British Museum. It's a dog called Zardin. And then in the late 20s, Mrs. Florsheim, one of the heirs of the Florsheim shoe fortune, she bought an Afghan hound, and the breed caught on. And it's the only breed to win both the Crufts, which is the great dog show in London, and the American Kennel Show in New York, usually about January, February. It's coming up again. And the great dog, Sirkin, which is the founding father of, or sire, that's the correct word, of a lot of the great Afghan hounds that are still around. And during the 60s and 70s, the breed caught on fabulously until people realized that it's a hard dog to handle, and also it's a lot of work keeping that coat. You have to brush it every day. And it's a dog I once said on KGO radio when I was on talking about animals. It's the only dog that I know that doesn't accept the fact that it's an animal, knows it's not a human, and acts like a cat. But that was the extent of Americans' knowledge of Afghanistan. When I was in Australia, I did an interview. I met the only woman veterinarian in Afghanistan. She was in exile. And I did an interview with her, and I'm going to play it right now.
Hello, my friends. This is Peter Paul, and I'm down here in Adelaide. And today I have another radio personality, well-known in Australia.
Oh, we made a mistake
Dr.
here.
Dr. Robbie Reed, who's a radio personality in here down in Adelaide, which is South Australia. I've got to get my geography right. And she's quite a charming, remarkable person. She might remind you a bit of Barbara Woodhouse, but then she's got a lot more. She's a veterinarian. Welcome to the program, Dr. Reed.
Hello, Peter. It's very nice to meet you. I was in your wonderful city of San Francisco about 6 weeks ago and had an absolutely superb time.
I'm glad that you were extended the same hospitality that I have been extended down here. So it's mutual. Dr. Reed, what type of, what should a caller to any program, which offers a kind of aid over the airwaves, what kind of, what should the caller expect in the way of advice?
Well, first of all, they must expect sympathy. and secondly, let's start at the beginning. The person who rings up for advice must give the right information. You want the age and the sex and whether the animal is desexed or not. Now, for me, and what kind of animal it is and its color. Now you get a mental picture of the animal. They describe the symptoms as nicely and as smoothly and as abbreviatedly, as shortly as they can. Now, sometimes you can make a diagnosis. Sometimes it is very obvious that the dog has a skin condition and so forth, and you can then describe various ones and say, if it's this, if it's that, if it's the other, you, under these circumstances, you go to a veterinarian. If they ring up and say, my dog has been vomiting, my cat has been vomiting, this is generally a thing for a veterinarian. You have got to tell them, not necessarily what they want to know, but what they should know. And the main role is to guide those people who should go to a veterinarian to go to one, and sometimes to guide them to a specialist. But also, sometimes people ring up and they just want assistance with very minor things, what kind of eye drops to use, should they clean a dog's ears, how often does it need its teeth cleaning, and so on and so forth. It's very important to advise people in a general way, because when you talk to them, you can say, have you had it de-sexed, and have you had it inoculated, and this is the time of year when dogs have all and cats have all sorts of skin problems. Are you grooming your dog properly? So that from one small question, you can give a large amount of advice in this way. But of course, you can't really make a positive diagnosis unless somebody says, my dog's been hit by the car, his leg is dangling and the bone's sticking out. Well, you can say, well, I think it's fractured, and why aren't you doing something straight away? Get weaving. And sometimes,
I'm going to get weaving, and we're going to not weave an Afghan rug, a rug, but we're going to now play, we switched the tapes, the first woman veterinarian in Afghanistan.
From Afghanistan.
Mission Wawi, I'll get it. She is a historical first, the first woman veterinarian in Afghanistan, but right now, because of the conditions there, she's at in northern Queensland, northern Australia. Welcome to the program. Say thank you, whatever.
Thank you very much for the interview. I'm a student in North Queensland at the James Cook University, and I'm doing my master's in veterinary pathology. I've been here in Australia for 18 months, I'm very happy to attend this 22nd World Veterinary Congress as a student, and I suppose the only Afghan delegate to this program. Mm-hmm.
Or to this Congress. Mishinwa, what is the Afghan attitude towards animals?
Afghanistan is a mountainous country, and most of the people are interested in farming, and each family and provinces have a piece of land, and they keep a few animals, and they are interested in all domesticated animals, and they're good hunters too, even they're interested in wild life.
What kind of wildlife would you find in Afghanistan?
Our forests in mountainous areas have all different species of wildlife, like including lion and deer and other wolves, especially in winter time, which are very dangerous. Our forests are not as safe as Australian rainforests to walk in.
We hear a lot about the Afghan hound being a dumb dog. Would you comment on that?
I don't think so, and that's correct, because probably this will be correct about the stray dogs and those with no owners, but those which have owners and are looked after, they're clever dogs, and they're beautiful big dogs, and especially nomads and herdmen are very much interested in keeping them, and they look after them. They're very expensive too.
Oh, they're over here. Mishinwa, What about cats or birds? Are those type of animals used as pets in Afghanistan?
Our people are especially interested in keeping birds. Some of them are really professional in keeping birds like parrots and other birds probably. I'm sorry, I don't know the names all in English, but they're interested. And also cats, too, because, you know, our houses are usually not very safe from mice. So people are interested to keep cats. I should mention keeping animals as a pet are different in our country compared to Western society. If we have a cat or dog, we will never allow them to enter our room or to touch our dishes and things or to play with children. We keep them, we like them as animals, but for safety, and we treat them as animals.
Why don't you allow them to touch, to play with the children?
First, I think because in under our circumstances, the disease are not controlled well, and if the children are contact with animals like cats and dogs, it can be very dangerous for them, because if they were bitten by them, you know, a disease like rabies is endemic in our society, and other parasitic diseases and other diseases which can be transmitted by biting of carnivore animals, very easy to be transmitted to children. And therefore, in our religion, actually, very close contact with animals. For example, if the dog or cat licks someone, or then we have to wash that properly. We can't pray with that dress or thing which we had. So, in the base of this religious point is on hygiene and disease control, I think, mostly. So therefore it's not very safe to play with children and
dogs.
Yeah.
As the first woman veterinarian, are you going to, since you're studying modern technology and mm-hmm. certainly you're affected by the cultural traditions of your society, are you going to combine the best of the modern and the best of your own cultural tradition to treat animals?
Yeah, exactly. I would think so. That will be the most successful way to use my profession there. And as a developing country, we don't have very
I don't know what happened there, but we'll get the rest of that interview, and we'll have a more complete, it was like a 52-minute interview, I have to chop it up, with Dr. Reed, spent an afternoon with her. And we'll have more, since I did a lot of veterinary and environmental and public policy interviews for KLW and Western Public Radio, so I'll be, as I said, mining those for these audio morsels. It's kind of, and this is interesting. I did run into a veterinarian where the country has free medical care, so they say, for everyone. And they also have free veterinary care, so we'll have that interview. It's quite interesting, and you'd never expect this from this country. Since the politicians in Washington, I think the House is one of the representative said on Fox TV today that they're probably going to be in recess, and Nancy Pelosi is, Madam Pelosi's over in Copenhagen, and I don't know what she's scoring over there, but anyway, we'll get into that another time about this warehouse that she was involved in Hayward, California. Big drug bust there. Anyway, she can do this as a speaker, call the House of Representatives members back to Congress to try to ram through Pelosi Care or Reid Care or Obamacare, whatever you want to call it. It's quite interesting that Howard Hodine, Dr. Dean, who's a medical doctor, he's qualified, former governor of Vermont, has said the Democrats should drop this thing, and it's time to go back to the drawing boards and get we need reform of the system, but we got to work on the lawyers as well, and that's one of my bet noirs, having been in the field. Anyway, I would suggest to people who are concerned, because those of us who were in, you know, the 50s and 60s and 70s, we're, according to some of the surveys, I think they're fairly accurate, that our age group and then people in the 20s to the 30s are the biggest and fastest users of the more in the population of the Internet and all these, what I call the latest phase of the Gutenberg Revolution. So, you know, ignorance is not bliss, one of my phrases. And people, you know, the newspapers have failed us, the print media, the magazines. It's interesting. I was talking to one of the last real journalists in Northern California. He's working up in Sacramento now. And we were talking about his employer and magazine. And I said, you know, California, magazines for some reason do not survive out here. And I used to write for San Francisco Business Magazine. San Francisco Magazine, excuse me, and San Francisco Business Times. In fact, ironically, I had briefly met Daniel Pearl when I it was just so nondescript. And so I feel like a kind of kinship with him because he was beheaded, killed him on a day significant to me, and it's just something very psychic about it. I wish I had gotten to know him better, but it was just one of those things. But we had both written for the San Francisco Business Times. Anyway, people have got to start to use alternative methods, and they are. The web, you know, there's a lot of news out there. There's a lot of good information. There's a lot of garbage. And, you know, it's like you've got to sort the wheat from the chaff. So I'd recommend that you, people are concerned about your health care, and we'll be getting more into this, that nobody's talking about all of this reckless driving. There's an epidemic in this country, and not only that, Canadians are starting to realize this. I read a report that Canadians are in eastern Canada are concerned. They use the phrase reckless driving epidemic. And, you know, when somebody gets hurt because of a reckless driver, as I have been hurt a couple of times, there are big medical bills, and guess who pays? The safe driver. You people who are safe drivers, who obey all the laws, who don't text, who don't use the cell phones, and obey the traffic laws. And, of course, when the insurance companies have to pay out these big settlements because of somebody's reckless driving or uninsured motorists, it's the responsible motorists who keeps insurance, who drives safely, obeys the rules, and pays his insurance premiums, who is in effect subsidizing these reckless drivers. So that and the medical costs that are incurred because of reckless driving. So it's something that needs to be looked at. And the only people getting rich on this are the lawyers, who get anywhere from a third to a 40-50%. So we'll be back Thursday, and I'll get my tapes straightened out. I had to transfer a lot of stuff. It's quite a bit of work, and I enjoyed doing it. And those of you who tuned in, or if you tuned in late, we keep all the programs up archived, and you can listen at your leisure and take what information is useful to you. Also, here's the tip. There was a woman was injured at Costco. And she was hit by another woman, so she claimed, cart. And she sued the woman, and the woman was successfully defended the case, and the injured woman lost. So be very careful when you're out shopping. Watch out for these crazies. You know, they're just as bad as reckless drivers with behind the wheel. These are people behind the shopping cart. So be very careful, because if you get injured in the stores, and stores are very cautious about these slip and fall cases. I'll get into that, because he had to couple in the law firm. So I want to thank you for listening, and I hope you will tune in Thursday, And of course, we look forward to January 2010 and our salute to Australia and New Zealand. We will have the Birdman of Perry Prison interview I did down there on using birds and fish to reduce tension among prisoners and as a means of social control. This is Peter Paul Vizzola working with the New Shadow. Thank you for listening.